morning. Welcome to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. The Toronto Blue Jays magic number is down to 2. They win yesterday 6-0 against the New York Yankees, finishing up a series of nothing but shutouts on the wrong end of a 2-0 and 6-0 decision. Wrap it up with a 6-0 win. Chris Bassitt, spectacular. Over 7 2/3 innings, just 6 base runners, 12 strikeouts. And why 7 2/3? Because that got him to the nice round number of 200 innings on the season. It's the first time in his career he's done that. He's only the fourth pitcher in baseball to do it this year. And he's the first Toronto Blue Jay since Marcus Stroman in 2017 to get to the 200 inning mark. It obviously meant a lot to Chris Bassitt to hear him talk about it after the game. 7 2/3 shutout is also just pretty damn good on its own. And it helps Bassitt tie another Blue Jays record. You have to go back to 1997 and Roger Clemens. For the last time, a Blue Jays pitcher had 9 starts with 6 or more shutout innings. So Bassitt has been, you know, by ERA or by wins above replacement, has not been necessarily their number one starter. But in terms of how often he went deep with a big zero on the board, nobody since Roger Clemens in 97 has done it to that degree. Bassitt will wrap up his season, the regular season portion, with a 16-8 record, 200 innings exactly, a 3.60 ERA, and just a very good season overall. He is a guy who has posted good innings pitch totals in a couple of the last years. He threw 181 2/3 last year. He's been up around 150 a couple times, pitched a lot in the pandemic shortened season. And all through that, he has, with the exception of 2016, when he was still, kind of finding his footing in the league and only made 5 starts, he's always been a sub-4 ERA guy. This 3.60 ERA, more or less in line with what the Jays were expecting when they signed him to a 3-year, $63 million deal in the offseason. So to hear Chris Bassitt tell it, he has been pitching with a sour taste in his mouth since getting eliminated early in the postseason last year. He gave up 3 earned runs over 4 innings. He had been in the playoffs with Oakland before and was fine. There's not a big track record of Chris Bassitt not getting it done in the playoffs or anything like that. But the experience of gassing out maybe by the end of the playoffs last year was fresh of mind for Bassitt. It changed how he did his offseason work and some of his in-season work this year. And he's going to get a chance, it looks like, to pitch in the postseason again. He's currently lined up to start the third wildcard game for the Blue Jays. They could tweak that and have him start the second wildcard game. Maybe it doesn't even go to 3 and he ends up ALDS game 1 or something like that. But he has done a terrific job helping put this Blue Jays team in position for Chris Bassitt and the entire team to get another crack at the playoffs here. With that win yesterday, the Jays looked like maybe they were headed toward a win and clinch scenario tonight, but the Seattle Mariners came back late against the Texas Rangers, which if you're a Blue Jay fan looking at the standings and wanting to clinch as early as possible, that part's tough. If you are a baseball fan who just likes watching Aroldis Chapman meltdown, then it was fine and borderline fun. Now, it would have been nice had Chapman gotten chased as he did, and then the Rangers held on, but that wasn't the case. So the Jays head into tonight, still in the second wildcard spot, a game up on Houston, 2 up on Seattle. They can clinch tonight. However, they will not know at the end of the game because they have the earliest start time of the group. They would win and then have to sit there watching a baseball game before they can officially celebrate. Would they do that? I don't really know. We'll see how it plays out. We'll see what Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic thinks about that. She joins us now. Caitlin, good morning. How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I'm good. I remember last year when the Blue Jays were set to clinch, I brought you in a poncho to the game because you had forgotten a raincoat or something like that. How are you approaching tonight where the Blue Jays could technically clinch tonight, but they wouldn't know it immediately after the game? Is today a poncho day for you down at Rogers Center? Are you holding that back for tomorrow? Are you maybe just missing the action altogether?
No, I'll be there. I'm going to bring a poncho today because there's probably a scenario where, like, yeah, the Jays win, and then they all just wait in the clubhouse maybe for either the Houston game to end, which I think is slightly earlier, and then or the Seattle game, because I think a loss to Houston also means the Blue Jays clinch because of the tiebreaker scenario. And then, yeah, the Seattle game, unfortunately, is like even later than it was yesterday. So it's like, just making us wait as long as possible for it. So, yeah, no, today's going to be a poncho day because I just want to be prepared for any scenario.
Those start times, by the way, 9:40 for Houston at Arizona and 10:10 for Texas and Houston. I guess, you know, part of this is on them. They could have just won another game earlier in the weekend and they'd be in control here. I guess let's play out a scenario where they do clinch tonight, Caitlin, or they clinch tomorrow. Do you expect a celebration to be on the level of last year's where, yes, obviously it's still a really big accomplishment over 162 to make the playoffs, but with expectations having been a little higher, with them not limping to the finish line here but not finishing dramatically well, like, what do you expect the tone of something like that to be?
That's a good question, and I really haven't thought about it in that way. I think I've just been sort of hyper-focused on, like, when is this going to happen? When can I know my future? Where will I be next week? But, you know, I think that it'll still be a pretty big celebration because I just think in general in baseball, it's so hard to get into the postseason. And I understand and the team understands that, you know, they had higher expectations on them. But they also are a team that has talked a lot about, like, we just need to get in. Like, I think there's a lot of belief in the room in the sense of, like, they feel like they could beat anybody on any given day because of the talent that they have in the room. And certainly we have seen them look really, really impressive. I thought last week in New York and Tampa they looked really good, and it did sort of look like things were all coming together. And then, yeah, you get brought down to earth a little bit with maybe the struggling offense against two really good pitchers in King and Cole. And so, you know, I think that this team has been through a lot. I think that they, even in the last month, they've been through a lot. Like, they've looked like they're out of it. They've looked like they're right in it. And so I think the celebration will be pretty significant because I think that they're going to be just proud of themselves for getting in and giving themselves a chance to go even further. So, you know, maybe not as big of a celebration as last year, just because it felt like last year it was like almost celebrating for the year before too, not making it. And this is a different group and it's a different team, but I think like guys are going to like release a little bit and have some fun probably when it finally happens.
I wonder, Caitlin, if Chris Bassett got a head start on that yesterday. Obviously the playoffs are not clinched, but he is done for right now, and he obviously accomplished something that means a lot for him last night. Not only did he get the win, which pushes the donation that him and his family have made to Jays Care Foundation up to $200,000 on the year, but he also hit the 200 inning marker, which he said had been a goal for a really long time. He had a great piece up on The Athletic this morning about what's gone into that and what that's meant to him. How special a moment do you think that was for Chris Bassett to hit that big milestone last night?
I think it was big. I think it probably, you know, obviously like playoff games and winning the World Series and all these different things are huge goals for players. But to me, it seemed like one of the biggest goals Chris Bassett probably had and really wanted to achieve it. And it's funny because I feel like you look at him and you kind of know the type of pitcher that he's been just through his career. And I was honestly shocked that he hadn't hit 200 innings before, because I just mean like the way that he's pitched this year and just his pedigree and his reputation, I suppose, has always been this guy that's fairly durable, that goes out, that can eat innings. It's just, I guess in previous years, he's had an injury here and there. I know he's had some freak injuries in his past, getting hit in the head with a ball a couple years ago in Oakland, and just like just different things that obviously caused him to miss a couple starts here and there. And then, yeah, it's hard to get to 200 innings if you're not making all your starts. And so I guess that's basically the reason why. But, you know, you just like you look at him and the way that he's pitched this year, it's like, wow, this guy, like, he can haul innings for a team. He goes out and you're almost penciling in six innings for certain. And there's been so many times this year where like he's in the eighth inning and it just looks like he's cruising along. So, you know, I've been so impressed with him. I've just been so impressed with the rotation in general this year. Like, I think that overall, they're all pretty high up on the list in terms of innings pitched this year. I mean, they've all made all their starts pretty much. A lot, like Berríos is right up there. Gosman's right up there in terms of innings pitched. Like, they're all right there, other than Ryu, who's obviously missed like most of the season because of injury. But yeah, like Chris Bassett, to me, it felt like it really, really meant a lot in terms of just like, I guess, how he sees himself as a pitcher and what he sees as like what he values and sees as like an elite pitcher is someone that goes out there every fifth day and hauls innings and helps the team and helps the bullpen. And 200 innings means you've done that for the entirety of the season. And I think it really meant a lot to him to do that, especially the first year with the new team where he signed a significant contract with.
And Caitlin, so he's also been open about by the end of last year's season with the New York Mets, he was feeling pretty tired. He's feeling pretty worn down. He threw 181 and two thirds innings last year, didn't have the greatest of playoff spots. Not a disaster, but not the start that he would have wanted to have. And so if you had heard that and you had heard his innings load go up this year, maybe you'd have a concern that, oh shoot, he's going to be tired again. Well, yesterday he tied a career high in strikeouts with 12. He also posted the second highest fastball velocity of his season here at the 200 inning marker. What has he changed to be able to not only get to the 200 inning marker, but he's looked the best he's looked all season over his last couple starts?
Yeah, I think that he's talked a lot about just getting older and getting smarter. And even yesterday after the game, he kind of talked about like, you know, when you're a young pitcher, you're coming up and it's like, don't skip anything, do all your work. And he said like, that is very, very important. Like, you do need an incredibly high work ethic to make it as a major league starter and to make it through a major league season. Like, you obviously do need to get your work in, but he's talked a lot this year about just kind of working smarter, not harder sometimes. And I think like, whether it's knowing when your body needs a rest, whether it's knowing when maybe you need to take a day off, maybe you don't need to throw as much. I think another reporter was talking about how Chris told him that he doesn't do long toss as much anymore. And so he's kind of preserving his body that way. And so I think like, there's just like little things that he's done and he's learned over his career. I think like, he's also talked a little bit about like, you know, he's been through injuries. And so he knows like, if there's something bothering you, even if it's just like slightly small, like kind of be smart about it, right? Like, don't not say anything, like trust the people that are around you that to help you. And that's going to make you better in the long run. So, you know, credit to him, because I would say for most of the time yesterday after the start where he was talking, it was like praising other people. You know, it was talking about, you know, the help that he's gotten from the Blue Jays organization in general. You know, Pete Walker obviously being a big influence on him. And then also just like the training staff and everybody like around the Blue Jays, the support staff, you know, that has helped him work out smart and kept him healthy and made sure like the little nagging things that he's had throughout the season haven't turned into anything more. And he's felt fresh and good for all of his starts. And so I think it's a combination of having good people around him, but also just like him learning from his experience and learning from all his years in the majors, like, and probably learning a lot, honestly, from last year. If he was tired at the end of the year, like, this is what I need to do to make sure that I am at my freshest when it really matters the most.
So he is now lined up to, if the Jays stay on turn, start, hey, wild card game 3 if things go well and you don't have to use Kevin Gausman on Sunday, wild card game 2 if things go down to the wire and you have to use Gausman, or hey, if things go really, really well, maybe ALDS game 1. So Bassett kind of in sit and wait mode now here, Caitlin. You had mentioned that, you know, he's gotten older and smarter. Well, speaking of older and smarter, Brandon Belt had another pretty good game yesterday, hit a home run, got hit by a pitch. He has looked pretty good coming back from the IL here. It looks like the back issue that was plaguing him is behind him, at least in terms of, you know, how he's looked at the plate. The Blue Jays hit him in the 2 spot yesterday. So since he's come back, he's hit 6th, 4th, and 2nd. Is this just John Schneider coming off of 2 shutouts tinkering? Do you expect Belt to stay in the 2 hole? And I guess more to the point, how relieved are the Blue Jays that Brandon Belt looks like Brandon Belt immediately after coming off the IL?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're pleased with Belt. I think that, you know, Belt has just had so much experience. He's played for so long. He really knows his body and himself. You know, he doesn't really take BP. And I think there was some sort of, like, concern about, you know, he hasn't seen pitching for a while. How's he going to bounce back? But he had been working a lot behind the scenes in the cages working on the velocity machine. And so I think he was pretty prepared and he kind of just knows his stuff. And he came up the aisle once this year, so probably learned from that experience too, just like how to get himself ready and prepared. And so, yeah, it's definitely great to see him because I think you missed his bat. I think you really need his bat right now. And certainly if things, you know, go well and they get into the postseason, that's a real important piece for them, I think. In terms of the lineup mix-up, I think, like, you know, we talked about it yesterday with Scheider, more of the context of actually moving Bo to the hitting fourth and what that meant. And, you know, Scheider said, you know, it wasn't necessarily just knee-jerk reaction to the two shutouts. Like, moving Bo down to hitting fourth, it was something that they'd been talking about for a little bit of time. And I guess maybe the two shutouts and just like, you know, time running out on the season, it's like, okay, pull the trigger now, I suppose, with that move. But yeah, like it worked, I guess. I think someone asked John about that afterwards and it was like, yeah, so far so good. Like, we'll keep doing it, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I've always been one where it's like, I'm sure we've talked about this, where it's like, you can configure a lineup so many different ways. And even the most like optimized lineup is like, gets you like a fraction more of a run or something like that. So, you know, with four or three games left in the season, I don't know that we need to like, you know, dissect the lineup and say what is right and what's not. But like, if this is working and they continue hitting, like maybe this is the postseason lineup and we'll just see where it goes.
Well, look, a fraction of a run that lineup, a fraction of a run is more than they scored Tuesday and Wednesday. So maybe they'll take it. And you're right, Caitlin, I agree. The specific order is not as worth focusing on as the nine guys who are in there. So let's move there. We saw Tuesday and Thursday this group of nine, Kevin Biggio at second base, Dalton Varsho in left field, Brandon Belt at DH. On Wednesday, we saw a little bit of a tweak with Whit Merrifield drawing in there. Obviously, we have not seen the last of Whit Merrifield. He's been really good for this team. John Schneider prioritizes contact kind of when making these decisions. But it looks at least like we could probably put Davis Schneider in a role of pinch hitter extraordinaire if a lefty comes out of the bullpen. What do you make of the fact that this has been the lineup now twice in the last three games where there is urgency to win these games? And is that the group of nine you would expect in game one of a wild card series?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, Davis Schneider has an incredible run. And to be honest, like, the Blue Jays probably aren't in this exact position without the 3 weeks that he had. And, you know, I think, like you said, can still be a really, really useful piece. Obviously, he's still, like, getting his work in. You know, it would be nice if the Blue Jays do get to play a meaningless game or two and they can get some of those guys some reps before the season ends just to get them going a little bit, just to make sure you're not, like, playing to the very, very end. And then the next time, you know, Davis Schneider gets in at bat is in a huge situation where, like, he has to get a hit or something like that. So I do think that would be nice just to mix some of those guys in. But yeah, I think that at this point you got to kind of go with the hot hand. You got to go with the guys that are performing, and you do a little bit have to go with experience, I think, and guys that aren't going to be like rattled. And not that I think that like any of the young guys, you know, couldn't handle it or anything like that. I'm not saying that, but you know, you want to just go with the guys in your lineup and on your roster that have done it before, proved they've done it before, that have years of experience, just like know what they're doing up there. And I think like that's really important at this time of year. And then, yeah, you got to keep the bats that have been going in there too. Like Biggio's been, you know, we can't say enough about him over the last couple of weeks, especially, but honestly, like months now, he's just been so consistent for them. And, you know, I think, you know, Varsho obviously looked good yesterday. You got a little bit from Matt Chapman. So, like, there's different things happening right now. You just kind of want to keep people in situations where you think they'll succeed and when they think they can help the team win.
Yeah, boy, did Matt Chapman need that home run, given how the last couple weeks and months have gone for him. Okay, so, Caitlin, that's roughly the lineup we'll expect to see as the Jays look to clinch here. In an effort to clinch earlier, perhaps, they've also juggled the rotation. You say Kikuchi is going to start tonight. They have a TBD listed for Saturday and Sunday. Ostensibly tomorrow is Hyunjin Ryu, who was, you know, lined up to start today, but they'll juggle those and throw Kikuchi tonight. What is your read on the reasoning behind that move, having talked to John Schneider after the game last night and just, you know, being around as they work through that decision?
Well, they're really not being open with why, understandably so. I think probably maybe if you could just like read into it, I thought, you know, Kikuchi looked pretty good against the Rays last time. And generally speaking, he's been good against the Rays this year. And, you know, Ryu struggled a little bit in his last start against the Rays. And I think maybe it's just a bit of urgency and going with the guy that, I mean, they're both really good pitchers, but going with the guy that, you know, does have the upside in terms of stuff and fastball and that kind of thing. And, you know, Kikuchi probably can give you a bit more length, or they're a little bit less cautious. I know that he doesn't go super deep into games the way that, like, Bassett or Gosman do, but probably a little bit more than Ryu. So I think there's probably just some urgency to, you know, match up as well as possible against the Rays. You know, it's funny, the Rays aren't playing for anything right now. Like, they're playing essentially just to, like, screw with the Blue Jays, probably. Like, to, I mean, what they're playing for essentially is to hopefully win so that they can just screw up the Blue Jays' rotation plans, I suppose, in the wild card. Like, that is essentially because they, you know, they're definitely in the wild card one. The Orioles won the division yesterday. And so what they're playing for essentially is, like, can we push it so Gosman has to pitch on Sunday so that we can throw the Blue Jays rotation plans, you know, up in the air. And, you know, that's basically the motivation, I suppose. So I think the Blue Jays, yeah, the decision to go with Kikuchi, probably just going with a guy that you like the stuff, you like your chances with him. He's pitched pretty well against the Rays this year. And you just hope that, you know, he can get it done. And then, yeah, maybe you go with Ryu tomorrow and then who knows on Sunday.
Yeah, the stakes feel low for Tampa Bay, but that's a pretty good incentive to play good baseball these next 2 days is burn Kevin Gosman. And that was my other thought, Caitlin, with this is if you say Kikuchi starts today and you do end up having to use Kevin Gosman on Sunday, then Kikuchi's at least ready to go for wildcard game three. And maybe they like him a little bit more there than Hyunjin Ryu. I specifically think of a scenario where they draw the Twins and that team is lefty heavy, although Ryu obviously a lefty as well. So, Caitlin, they are playing the Rays for three here. They'll finish the season with six of their last nine against Tampa Bay, and then potentially play Tampa again in the wild card series. You wrote a very good piece at The Athletic earlier in the week about how if we get this matchup, the contrast in styles between Toronto and Tampa Bay makes that a pretty compelling wildcard series. Now, I don't know that we'll see those styles fully employed this weekend because, again, the Rays don't have a lot to play for. Maybe you don't want to show too much to the extent that you can hide stuff in baseball. But what would you be looking forward to? What makes that matchup compelling for you if this is a preview of the wildcard series?
Well, I think they're just really fairly, like, closely matched. I mean, I talked a little bit about, you know, both teams have good pitching, obviously. I mean, the Rays' sort of entire organizational MO is good pitching. And the Blue Jays this season have had really, really good pitching. And I think that I was thinking, and I think I wrote this, it's like in a 5-game series or a 7-game series, I'd definitely lean on taking the Blue Jays rotation just because, I mean, one, the Rays rotation is fairly decimated and they really only have like Glasnow and Eflin in terms of starters that they're going to go with in terms of the wild card. And then like you look deeper into a series and then you're sort of thinking like, how are the Rays going to cobble this together? Now they're the Rays and they have a ton of experience doing this. So like, I don't put it past them that they would be able to do it. It's just generally like, I might take the Blue Jays depth of rotation in a longer series. But I think in the wild card, like it's hard to give the Blue Jays like a huge advantage in terms of their rotation, just cause like, you got to win 2 games and 2 games is such a toss up. It's like, you know, we watch baseball all year, these 3-game series and anything can really happen. And so, you know, the bullpens to me look fairly even too. I think Blue Jays maybe like is more reliable, like healthy guys, but you know, the Rays are the Rays. They always have a ton of guys coming out of their bullpen. And so then you look at the offenses, I think Blue Jays have a clear advantage defensively. But the thing is that you can't defend home runs and the Rays hit a lot of home runs. And that's the difference to me, too. It's like the Blue Jays offense, yes, they can do it both ways, and so can the Rays. It's just the Rays have far more reliably won with the long ball this year, whereas the Blue Jays have more often been like scrappy, stringing hits together, you know, stringing runs together, whether it's like, you know, forcing the opposing team to walk you or just be very patient or, you know, utilizing their mistakes, whether it's pass balls or whatever, errors and everything. So the Blue Jays have been more reliant on that sort of like good sequencing, which can be risky as we've watched this team all year. And sometimes the sequencing doesn't happen in the proper order. You know, you go solo home run, then you go double, single, walk, like double play or something. And like that's happened a lot this year. So I think with the Blue Jays, like, it's just to me, on paper, the Rays and the Blue Jays are actually like fairly closely aligned. Like the numbers, the raw numbers are all pretty close. Something that really differs is that the Rays have hit a lot more home runs and they've done a lot better with like runners in scoring position. They just capitalize on those moments a lot better than the Blue Jays this year. So like that to me could be the difference in a series. But otherwise, like, I think they match up fairly evenly with one team having slight advantages and areas and another team having slight advantages in a different area.
Where do you come down on, and look, we haven't seen John Schneider in a lot of playoff games, so maybe it's an unknown matchup, but in my estimation, Kevin Cash is one of the best kind of micro managers in baseball when we get into these short series or single game situations. Even with, you know, some of how Tampa's been thinned out, I think that's part of why people have a confidence still in this Rays team. How big a factor do you think that could be in a short series?
Yeah, I know, it's a good point. I mean, not only is Kevin Cash just a really, really good manager and has been with the Rays for a long time and kind of like knows their style, knows how they need to win, knows what buttons to press and what levers to pull and all those kinds of things, but he's also got a ton of playoff experience. Like, he's been with the Rays through these playoff runs the last number of years for them, and he's had to do it different ways. And it feels like every year we're talking about the Rays, how they're like decimated with injuries or how they don't have this guy or that guy or whatever, and they still get through and they still end up being one of the best teams. And like you said, I mean, he's really, really good at knowing what to do. And we haven't seen John Schneider in playoff experience much. Obviously last year didn't go very well. Not entirely his fault, but obviously that is a series that people don't want to remember. So that's another factor too. And so again, like, maybe you give the edge to Kevin Cash just based on experience, but at the end of the day, like, manager can just make the moves and players have to execute. So that's also really what it comes down to. But, you know, another factor too is that it'll be in the Trop. And, you know, the Rays traditionally have played really, really well at home. The Blue Jays traditionally have not played well at the Trop. You know, last weekend went well for them. But that's going to be another factor too. It's pretty loud in there. I know it's like, haha, they can't have no fans and stuff, which is true. But like, when it's packed in there, and obviously the roof, you know, it's a closed roof and stuff, it's pretty loud in there. It actually can be an intimidating place to play.
Well, they're 53-28 at home this year. So even with the Jays having been decent down there this season and actually having been a better offensive team on the road than at home this year, yeah, the Trop is also a factor there. Caitlin, last one for you before I let you go here. You also wrote a piece at The Athletic coming off of those two shutouts of, hey, how far could this Blue Jays offense actually go in the playoffs, given their propensity to, you know, have these extended slumps? And I know the numbers are the numbers, and how often they've been held to zero or one runs is actually pretty in line with each of the last 2 years. Maybe just feels a little worse this year because the fewer home runs and you know, the struggles at home and things like that. But what is an indicator for you that you're looking for, whether this series or once the wild card gets going, for this Blue Jays offense? I think particularly with the guys at the top of the lineup, what's kind of front of mind for you with how inconsistent they've been?
Well, you know, yesterday was a good indication because they're hitting home runs, and they're hitting home runs at home, which, you know, has not happened a lot this year. So that was good. But that was a little bit like guys at the bottom of the order doing it, and obviously without getting the three-run home run. I think you really want to see Vlad and Bo just put up some good at-bats. Springer, too. I know Springer, you can sort of rely on him. Just, he's been in these big experiences so often, and he has so much playoff experience. And so, you know, I'm not too worried about Springer, but I think you really want Bo and Vlad to have a couple good games or a good game, or, you know, I don't know how often they'll play if the games end up being meaningless. Maybe it's just like one at bat just to get a feel for it. I feel like that was maybe how they did it last year, that last game of the season in Baltimore when it didn't really matter. But yeah, I think to me, it's those two guys. You want to see those two. Whether it's Vladdy hit a couple balls hard, maybe get a home run. Bo had gone on base a couple times yesterday, right? So I think that is, to me, what I'll be looking for. It's like, you know, those are your two guys. Like, you know, you have a full team, and George is really important. All these guys are really important. Biggio, Bell, you know, Springer, all this, everyone. But I think you really want to see Bo and Vlad look good right until the very end, so that they're going into the postseason with some momentum and some good at bats behind them, and they can kind of just like pick up where they left off.
Not a bad example of that yesterday. They combined for three hits. Bobichet even steals a base, which he's barely done this year. Another important thing we'll have to tee up if it's Tampa is they run a lot and the Blue Jays do not. Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic, thank you for taking the time out. Good luck with Poncho weekend.
Thank you so much.
Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic. Make sure you head over there and check out the couple of articles that we mentioned there. Great piece on Chris Bassitt reaching the 200 inning marker last night. Also some good analysis of not only what a Toronto-Tampa series could look like, but what to expect from a Toronto Blue Jays offense that has underwhelmed more often than not this year. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to take a longer look at the Tampa Bay side of things, not just for the wild card look ahead. There's a whole series of baseball to be played here at Rogers Center this weekend, and it involves the Tampa Bay Rays. It starts tonight at 7 o'clock with Yusei Kikuchi against Aaron Civale. Adam Berry of Rays.com is going to join us next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Toronto Blue Jays win last night 6-0, shrink their magic number to 2. They will have to try to get it done against the Tampa Bay Rays, a team that, I don't know, would the Rays like to see the Blue Jays out of the playoffs? Would the Rays like to see the Blue Jays knock to the third wild card? Would the Rays like to lay down and face the Blue Jays in the wild card? There are a lot of ways this could go, only so much of it that the Jays or Rays can control themselves. Adam Berry of MLB.com, of Rays.com, joins us now. Adam, good morning, man. How are you? Welcome to Toronto.
Doing good. How are you guys?
We're pretty good. It was a nice exhale yesterday for the Blue Jays because they avoided getting swept by the Yankees and heading into this Rays series with a lot of must win. I'd imagine there was a nice exhale for the Rays on Wednesday as well. And I read your piece about how and why they kind of just chose to celebrate after Wednesday night's game, because you got to celebrate at some point, but they're not going to win the division and they've had the wild card clinched for so long. How did they come to that decision, and what was the vibe of we're just going to pick any random night to celebrate here?
Yeah, it was pretty unusual just walking into a clubhouse after, you know, kind of a random 5-0 win over the non-contending Red Sox and seeing guys, you know, popping bottles and celebrating and doing all that kind of stuff. But when you look into it a little bit more, and you know, their explanation made some sense in the sense that, you know, they weren't able to celebrate when they clinched a playoff spot because it came at the end of kind of a gut-wrenching series against the Orioles and a tough loss that really you could look back on and say kind of swung the division in the Orioles' favor at Camden Yards, 12 days ago at this point. So they really didn't want to celebrate then. They kind of acknowledged that they clinched, but they felt they kind of owed it to the players and to themselves to acknowledge and, you know, enjoy the fact that they did make it back to the playoffs for all they've overcome, you know, for the fifth straight year, 97 plus wins and counting, the second best team in the American League. And they kind of targeted that game against the Red Sox, knowing that they had the off day to recover, if you will, from their clinching celebration heading into this last weekend of the season. It could have been extremely awkward because had they lost that game, they would have been, that would have been the night that the Orioles clinched the division and the Rays would have been popping bottles despite losing out on their top priority of winning the division. But it worked out well enough that, you know, they were on a little bit of a good streak there. They won the game, they played well heading into this final series, and they felt like they needed to celebrate.
How does this Rays team feel about not winning the division? Obviously, they had this historic start to the season. They win 13 in a row. You know, all through May, we're talking, hey, this is the best record since this, since that. And then, look, all credit to the Orioles. They've won 100 games. They've done a monster swing from 110 losses just 2 years ago. 100 wins is a lot to keep up with. But the Rays started the season hotter than any team we've seen since like the 1900s. What do you make of that? How has the team navigated that they've had this really good year, but they didn't win the division? Their season, where they could win 100 games still, is going to come down to a best 2 out of 3 wild card series rather than an American League East championship.
Right. They're kind of 2 minds about it. On one hand, yeah, it is disappointing. You know, they always set out to win the division, and they really wanted to because they saw last season when they went into Cleveland and got swept out of there, scoring 1 run in 24 innings in the wild card series, just how kind of fickle those best of 3 series can be.
Tell me about it.
It is disappointing. Yeah, they were 47-19 to start the year. You know, they had a 6.5 game lead in the division heading into July. So from that perspective, yeah, like, it is pretty disappointing that they didn't win the division. But then on the other hand, you can look at it from kind of the perspective that they've been taking on lately, which is, you know, they survived one of the worst months in franchise history in July. And that was before August, when they lost shortstop Wander Franco to indefinite administrative leave while he's under MLB investigation. They lost A. Shane McClanahan to, you know, another elbow surgery, which was on top of losing starters Drew Rasmussen and Jeffrey Springs. You know, they've lost 3/5 of their opening day rotation. So, you know, they've still been the second best team in the American League. So, you know, on that hand, they do see some positives to be gained from this. But yeah, not winning the division is huge, because all of a sudden you're now subject to the whims of this best of 3 series instead of having the bye, having the chance to kind of set yourself up. And in their case, because they have so many injuries right now, get healthy. So that is going to be a tough draw, basically, no matter who they wind up facing in this wild card series.
And the Jays feel similarly without the obviously hot start to April and May. You know, the goal was probably to win a division. They might end up with the 3rd best record in the American League and be on the road in the wild card series visiting this Tampa Bay team. So Tampa sitting here with 97 wins. They can't reach Baltimore. They can't fall to the 2nd wild card. They have already Tyler Glasnow and Zach Eflin lined up for the first 2 games of the wild card series, as I'd imagine was their preference. So what is the focus this weekend for them? You mentioned they're dealing with a few banged up guys. We'll see Aaron Civale today for the first time in a little while. I don't imagine the Rays are the type of team that's like trying to knock the Jays into a certain wild card spot or keep them in the 2nd wild card spot. But what is front of mind for this team this weekend in a series that doesn't matter in the standings, but still a lot on the line here, it feels like?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to hear what they say this afternoon as far as that goes. But, you know, I think they're going to kind of respect the integrity of the other wild card race, you know, not exactly roll over. But the priority has to be getting healthy and getting ready for that wild card series, you know, getting their pitching in line, which, like you mentioned, they've already done that. They have Zach Eflin and Tyler Glasnow in line to pitch games 1 and 2 regardless. You know, they could run out Civale and Todd Bradley, and maybe they call up some guys from AAA now that season's over to finish the season. But I think they probably learned the value last season of not really worrying about who you're going to face, because they probably thought they were going to be better off last year facing Cleveland than the other teams, and we saw how that went. So, you know, I think they basically owe it to themselves to get healthy, to line up their pitching, you know, make sure the guys who feel like they need to get on the mound or need to get back in the batter's box get their opportunities. But, you know, you have to focus at this point on being at your best, your hottest and healthiest for that wild card series and setting yourself up for the ALDS. So, you know, maybe Yandy Diaz plays 1 game or gets in at bat, you know, as a DH or a pinch hitter or something, rather than trying to start or something along those lines. You know, you don't have to use Eflin in the last game of the season, since there probably won't be anything on the line. And basically just trying to set up their pitching, you know, get the guys in that need to get in so that they're ready to go and feeling good and confident, you know, along with their prospects, the guys that are going to all of a sudden play major roles because of the other guys that have been hurt and probably won't play in the playoffs at this point, you know, make sure they're feeling good about themselves heading into the postseason.
In terms of feeling good about yourself heading into the postseason, how important a start is it for Aaron Civale tonight? He hasn't pitched in 9 days due to, you know, illness, not feeling that great. And he also, the results have not been that great since joining Tampa Bay, a 5.36 ERA, but his strikeout rate is way up, his walk rate's down. How important is it for Civale to put a good outing up on the board ahead of the postseason here?
Yeah, I think it would certainly help, but honestly, at this point, I'm not even really sure what kind of a role he'll play in a wild card series. You know, a short series, you can see them going Eflin to Glasnow, and then if they get to a 3rd game, it's going to be all hands on deck. Mm-hmm. You know, the season's on the line. You're probably not going to roll this guy out who's had, you know, an ERA approaching 8 over the last month. You know, he has, like you said, the strikeout rate is good, but the results are not. So you're probably not going to put your season necessarily in his hand, at least in, you know, kind of an extended role come the playoffs. But if you get into a DS, especially if you get into a CS and you start to need three or four starters, he could be a guy who comes into play. And, you know, they did give up a good prospect in Kyle Manzardo for him for a reason. So clearly, you know, they believe in the guy and they want to see him perform at a high level, but it just hasn't happened yet. And, you know, when they have the option of Zach Littell, who's been, you know, a pretty solid, serviceable starter, and the depth of the bullpen that they have, I wouldn't be surprised at this point if they kind of roll into, you know, a wild card series looking to go Eflin Glasnow bullpen and roll into a DS, maybe going, you know, Eflin Glasnow Littell bullpen or something along those lines. So I think it's pretty key for Savali just to show that he can be relied upon in a major role in the playoffs.
We saw Taj Bradley last series. We could see him again in one of these games this weekend. We'll see. He has a 5.52 ERA, obviously doesn't have a ton of experience, but do you think the Rays are looking at him as, hey, maybe this guy, if we shorten his outings to one or two innings, he's kind of mid-game length in one of those bullpen days, that he could have a role in that scenario?
I could kind of see that. They did it with Luis Patino 2 years ago when he was coming off a similar role, you know, a young starter who maybe didn't have necessarily the deepest arsenal but had really good stuff and really big-time fastball. I could definitely see them maybe shortening him up for, you know, an inning or two or one time through the lineup or something along those lines and just telling him, you know, hey, go throw gas and we'll see what happens because he's got electric stuff. And the results have been inconsistent. Even, you know, you look at his last outing, he went a career-high 7 innings, 6 runs. It was really just, you know, one bad inning that kind of got away from him, and they were asking him essentially to cover innings just based on the circumstances around that start and the way the bullpen had been used before that. So, you know, he kind of, you know, did his job to a certain extent, even though the results look ugly. So, but he's got electric stuff. He's a young guy. He's learning on the fly. And we've seen the Rays rely on young pitchers in kind of different roles. So I could certainly see them, you know, maybe trying to shorten him up, but they also have enough bullpen depth, honestly, at this point, that they don't necessarily need to. It would be kind of a luxury almost to do that with him because they do have enough back end bullpen arms and some front end guys to shorten games in that way.
Yeah, which is pretty remarkable considering they just lost Jason Adam and we don't know when he'll be back. Obviously, getting Robert Stevenson back the other day is a big one. So you mentioned some of the injury concerns. Some of these guys need to get healthy. Randy Rosarena was back in the lineup Thursday. Yandy Diaz, you said, yeah, maybe he only plays in one of these games. Robert Stevenson appears to be fine. There are a few guys on the IL for this Rays team, though, whose return dates are a little uncertain, and we don't know. Could Jose Siri be back in the mix here? Obviously, he got hit on the hand, but with a guy like that, could you see him in kind of a pinch run / defensive replacement specialist role, even if, you know, his hand isn't where it needs to be gripping a bat?
Yeah, I think basically as long as he is capable of holding a bat, then he has some value because the defense is so elite, the base running is so elite, the speed is so game-changing, really, to a certain extent, that it's probably you're better off carrying somebody like him than maybe an Oslavis Basabe or, you know, a backup infielder who's only going to get in the game if somebody gets hurt or there's kind of like a disaster scenario unfolding. But they do have a lot of decisions to make there because, you know, is he going to be capable of doing that? How far out is Luke Raley? You know, he's a big left-handed bat for this team, but it doesn't seem like he's going to be available for the wild card series. Could he be an option in the DS? They have to figure all this stuff out here this last, couple of days of the season. And Kevin Cash has been pretty open to, like, it's going to come down to that Tuesday 10 a.m. roster deadline to figure out some of these stuff. And I think Siri is at the top of that list.
Well, look, man, as someone who does a 10 a.m. radio show, I'd imagine if it's Jays Rays, we're getting the 12 o'clock start too. So yeah, that'll be the whole show. We get the rosters at 10 a.m. Let's break them down. So Kevin Cash, if he's going to run that down to the wire, I'd imagine that this weekend, even if the outcomes don't matter that much to the Rays, there are a couple of guys with something to play for, making a case for inclusion on that roster, whether it's Basabe, a Curtis Mead, old friend here, Raimel Tapia is on the Rays now, even a Junior Caminero or something like that. Who are you kind of most focused on to see how they're used and how they perform this weekend?
So Jonathan Aranda is probably the most interesting guy at this point because he is a lefty bat, can play first and second, you know, could be useful at first if Yandy Diaz isn't necessarily ready to go in the field. Could be used at second, you know, as a lefty bat against right-handed pitching, which I would imagine, correct, is what the Blue Jays are going to throw at the Rays if it comes to that in the first couple of games of a wild card series. So that's a useful hitter to have in there. It's a guy who's, you know, really thrived in the minor leagues, but just hasn't quite put it all together in the big leagues. And kind of an unusual circumstance, Kevin Cash mentioned him specifically as somebody that they need to get going. Cash does not do that pretty much ever with anybody. So when he specifically said Aranda as a guy that they would like to get going, that really stood out to me. He's played a lot lately. I would imagine he'll play a fair amount this weekend. just to see how he kind of matches up and, you know, how his bat's going heading into that the potential wild card series. Because, you know, the way that Rayleigh is hurt and Brandon Lau is out, they're a little bit right-handed dominant. So, you know, a left-handed bat like an Aranda could potentially go a long way for them. So I think they'll probably be keeping a pretty close eye on a guy like him, Curtis Meade, another rookie, and then you mentioned Junior Caminero, top prospect, who hits the ball just about as hard as anybody that I've seen in baseball. But, you know, he basically came straight from Double A and started the season in High A. So is that a guy you really want to just throw into the postseason stage? We'll see. But, you know, I think they'll probably want to see how he handles this atmosphere as well first.
So you mentioned Kevin Cash and some of the decisions he has to make here and what he does and doesn't talk about. Kevin Cash won two back-to-back American League Manager of the Year awards in 2020 and 2021. Not going to win it this year. I think we can be assured that that's probably a Brandon Hyde award given the upswing of the Baltimore Orioles the last couple of years. But Kevin Cash has earned a reputation as one of the best in-game managers in all of baseball. When you look ahead to a short series specifically, I know it didn't go Tampa Bay's way last year. I know that they have made, you know, runs to the World Series, not won a ring yet. But just how big an advantage can Kevin Cash be? I know the players have to execute on both sides, of course, but Cash does have this reputation as maybe the best in-game manager in baseball. And it strikes me that in a very short series, that advantage is magnified.
It certainly can be. I mean, even if you look back at last year's wild card series, you know, his decisions really didn't have anything to do with them losing. It was the fact that they couldn't hit. But you look back, actually, at the way that he managed their pitching staff in that second game, which was win or go home, and it was brilliant. Like, the fact that he got them through to the point that he did, basically to their last arm in the bullpen, you know, giving up no runs to that point, was really incredible work by him. And that was a relatively injured staff at that point. So it was really impressive what he was able to do with that. And he is, you know, he gets the most out of guys. He understands the roles. He doesn't bury them with bad matchups. The challenge for him is just going to be the fact that they don't necessarily have the typical depth and roster that they've had when they're healthy. You know, this is not the team that they had on opening day. This is not the team they had at the All-Star break. Heck, this is not the team they had on September 1st because of all these injuries recently. So it has put Cash in a little bit of a difficult position of having to test out prospects the last week of the season when they're theoretically playing with the division on the line. But you've still seen they've played well. They've been able to win, and a lot of that is really a credit to him and the way that he manages guys and communicates clearly what their roles are going to be. You know, you see they've had a lot of success pinch hitting, and a lot of that is the way that they prepare hitters for the matchups that they might see later in games, and that ultimately goes back to Kevin Cash, the coaching staff in the front office.
With respect to some strategy elements, the Tampa Bay Rays are, by Fangraph's base running metric, which is not just stolen bases, it's everything, you know, going first to third on a single, things like that. They're the best base running team in baseball. If we just look at stolen bases, it's basically them, Arizona, and Kansas City tied for second within a stolen base or two. Obviously, Cincinnati is first. That's been the story of their year. But Tampa Bay is, you know, kind of right there as one of the most aggressive teams on the bases in all of baseball. Sure, getting Jose Siri back is a swing factor in that. Do you anticipate the Rays keeping that level of aggression up in a playoff series? And I ask that not necessarily because of history. Vidal Brujan, you know, had a couple stolen bases last year in that short playoff series, but stolen bases are up so much around baseball. I'm fascinated to see what every manager, but particularly an aggressive manager like Kevin Cash, does with the new stolen base environment in the postseason.
I would say it kind of depends on the personnel and the situation. You know, if you are playing for one run, then sure, you know, you'd be aggressive with a guy like Josh Lowe or Randy Arozarena. But, you know, if you look at the personnel they have, I mean, the guys who have stolen a lot of bases for him, Wander Franco is obviously not going to be on the roster. Luke Rayleigh's hurt. Siri, you mentioned, you know, maybe he's a guy that you can be aggressive with if he's healthy and able to take the field. But, you know, otherwise, some of their top base stealing threats aren't going to be on this roster. And you know, I don't think you want a guy like Taylor Walls, you know, if he's able to get on base, taking that risk in a, you know, a tight situation or something just to try to, you know, advance 90 feet when more likely than not, you know, it's the teams that hit home runs in the playoffs that are going to go the farthest. So I could see it being a factor with a guy like Josh Lowe, potentially Randy Arozarena. I mean, we saw him steal home in the playoffs a couple years ago, so anything's possible if he's on base. But I think it is something that they have to have in mind. And then I think the other part of that, the flip side of that is, you know, they have to be careful with a guy like Tyler Glasnow on the mound because the Blue Jays did it very well against him running, and that could disrupt him, and that could be something that changes the game against him in a negative way. So I do think it'll be a factor, especially just because of these new rules and the way you've seen it change the game this season in general. But I don't necessarily know if that's going to be like the biggest arrow in the Rays' quiver in the postseason.
Yeah, it's a tough one because if you steal 90 feet, but then you've got a 30 home run hitter behind you, well, the 90 feet and the risk is maybe not worth it because Isak Paredes is hitting bombs or whatever. By the way, Adam, before I let you go here, I loved your piece on Isak Paredes's kind of unique approach to 30 home runs. Some similarities there with obviously not results yet, but an approach with him and Davis Schneider for the Blue Jays. Great piece. Before I let you go here, I know we're running out of time, but with Paredes, what does make him special for anyone who hasn't gotten a chance to read that piece yet?
So actually a Blue Jays connection in there as well, because Chad Mettola was obviously a hitting coach with the Jays staff a couple of years, a decade ago, I guess at this point. He said he kind of learned and understood and appreciated the value of the pulled home run from guys like Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion. And that's what you've seen Isak do. All of his home runs in the major leagues have been to left field to the pull side. That's what he does. He goes up there trying to hit a home run to left field. And if he gets to two strikes, he's willing to separate a little bit and try to go to the opposite field and take a two-strike approach. But it's an incredible, kind of transformation that he's made from this sort of, slappy on-base guy in the minors to a, pull power, nothing but a guy last year, to really just an all-around power threat and run producer in the Rays lineup. And a lot of that is that transformation that we wrote about.
It's a lot of fun. It was a great piece. Adam Berry of MLB.com, of Rays.com. Thanks so much for taking the time out.
For sure. Appreciate it.
Adam Berry, MLB.com, Rays.com. Make sure you're checking out their side of things this weekend for this series, of course. And then, heading into potentially a wild card series between the Blue Jays and the Rays. Now, the Jays have to clinch first. They have to see where they land in the standings. We know that if they finish in the second wild card spot, they'll visit Tampa Bay. If they finish in the third wild card spot, they'll visit Minnesota. Still a chance, though, that they don't finish in a wild card spot whatsoever. So some work still to do. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll see how voice of the Toronto Blue Jays, Ben Wagner, feels about this weekend series and the Jays' chances. Making a three-game set with the Rays here, effectively a six-game set. Ben Wagner joins us next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Your daily dose of everything NFL. It's the Fan Checkdown with Matt Marchese and Donovan Bennett. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. That is Whiskey Glasses. Ben Wagner, voice of the Toronto Blue Jays on the Sportsnet Radio Network, joins us now. No champagne goggles today, or are you bringing them just in case everyone kicks around for like 1 a.m. when the Jays could potentially clinch tonight?
Oh, I'm bringing the boots. I'm bringing the parka. I'm going to bring the hat, to keep the champagne out of my eyes.
That's a pro move right there.
Yeah, and hopefully no whiskey glasses. That's bad news. Yes. Go to the brown stuff.
Yeah, that's not a celebratory. That's a you get swept and don't make the playoffs song, unfortunately. Yeah. Ben, fun night down at Rogers Center last night. A big night for Chris Bassitt. He hits the 200-inning marker. Yes, our bar for workhorses has decreased over the years. It's possible only four guys reach that 200-inning marker this year. What do you think it means to Chris Bassitt and to this team to have someone who has been able to put that number up? First time for the franchise since Marcus Stroman in 2017. Even if 200 doesn't feel like the biggest number, it's a pretty big one these days.
I think there are certain things over the course of a season as a starting pitcher you go to spring training hoping to accomplish. Make every start. Get to that magic number 30, 31. That means you've taken the ball every time that you've been asked over the course of a year. And 200 innings for a starting pitcher is still a big deal. It's still a milestone. And I think you could see in the face of Chris Bassitt as the game was going on, and his pitch count was very efficient early on, that gave him a shot to get deep into the ballgame. And then, and I know on Sportsnet TV, they pulled a couple of clips of mid-inning conversations while the Blue Jays were at the plate that Pete Walker and John Schneider were having with him in the sixth and the seventh. And Arden and I on the broadcast last night said, well, we know what the last conversation was. Hey, how you doing? Get away from me. That was Chris Bassitt's answer for, going into that eighth inning, because he knew, and everybody in that dugout knew, as the outs were kind of being clipped away there, that he was four away, three away, two away, and then one away. And I thought it was a great move, one, to allow him to get to that milestone, and two, also just have another badge of honor for one of these guys that's in the rotation. that hit a strikeout mark. You know, Blue Jays have four pitchers with 175 or more strikeouts, and that's only the fourth time that it's been done in Major League history. And three out of those four are in recent memory, but still, it's something that hasn't been done in Blue Jays franchise history. So collectively, this is a really big deal. And all these things for these pitchers, and kind of were underappreciated, I think, going into the regular season. And in my mind, Chris Bassitt has exceeded every expectation and really surprised me with the season. I thought that we would get a little bit more highs and lows with Chris Bassitt. The pitch repertoire, how much was he going to think his way through? But he's a really smart guy. He's changed what he's done over the course of the year to keep a lot in the tank and bring some of his best stuff down the stretch when the Blue Jays needed him the most. And last night when the Blue Jays, you can't classify it as a must-win ball game, but it certainly made things a lot easier going into this Tampa Bay Rays series with the way that he pitched and positioned the Blue Jays to post that victory. And he's a large reason why it became so comfortable last night.
Ninth time this year he's gone six or more innings with a zero on the scoreboard, tying Roger Clemens' franchise record from 1997. Ben, you mentioned he saved some of his best stuff for when it matters most. He ties a career high in strikeouts yesterday. He posts the second highest fastball velocity we've seen from him this year. Bassitt seems like a guy whose confidence level is always pretty high, but when you're able to, like, the reaching the 200 inning milestone, when last year he pitched fewer innings and talked about being tired by the end of the season, how he is it going to be for this team and for Bassitt that he's coming in now having pitched more innings and performing at the, like, this is the best we've seen him all season over these last couple starts, even with the innings total?
Yeah, I think it's really important. And last night was another prime example. Like, he understands himself when he's out there. He doesn't let the game speed up on himself. He'll slow down the game that's around him. Last night, he bends over to tie a shoe that's already tied. So he's like, you know what? I need to be here. I gotta relax the heart rate. I need to get my legs underneath me. He makes a really cool play over next to first, covering the bag when Vladdy made a good pick. And he kind of slow strolls going back over to the mound. And then Alejandro Kirk had a really good feel too here. He goes out and says, I'm going to ask for time. I'm going to take this mound visit. But Kirky also waited till Bassitt was almost on the mound, then turned around to the umpire and took the slow stroll out just to give him an extra 20 to 30 seconds. So this is all by design. This is all by design. Bassitt is a big thinker here. And he has been thinking about the month of September, the month of October, all the way back to February when he first arrived to camp and we were getting to know him. And, you know, he was plotting out the pitch sequencing, trying to get to learn everybody. The Blue Jays needed to learn him, right? And he has changed course a couple of times over the summer months, but all by design to get. And you know, you mentioned the fastball velocity, and I noticed it too last night. I mean, he had an extra gear last night, and I think this is going to only benefit the Blue Jays moving forward, because if you stack up Kevin Gausman to Chris Bassitt or Jose Barrios, that's the best 1-2-3 that the Blue Jays have to run out there in the best of three. You hope you don't need all three. You would love to do it in two. Getting into that wild card, that is still something that as a box that the Blue Jays need to check, but they are certainly in much better position because of what Chris Bassitt has given them.
And it looks to me, Ben, like they're trying to check that box as quickly as possible. They juggled the rotation a little bit heading into tonight. We'll see Yusei Kikuchi on the mound. This was on paper a Hyunjin Ryu start. If everyone stayed on turn, Kikuchi would have gone tomorrow. We'll see how Saturday and Sunday play out, but I think that's dependent on tonight's result. What did you make of the decision to go to Kikuchi tonight? What does that tell you about what the Blue Jays are thinking here?
Well, I like it. And I actually talked with somebody in the dugout about this move when we found out that the probables were TBA. You got to thinking about it and you're like, okay, if this is a Friday night, what is the best case for the Blue Jays moving forward through this weekend? You want to come in, you want to establish a W. You want to position yourself to get the wins out of the way because you control your own destiny by winning. And it works twofold. One, Hyunjin Ryu just wasn't sharp. He hasn't been sharp the last couple of days, last couple of starts. And 5 days ago when he was pitching against the Rays, fastball was down significantly in velocity, not great in life. The changeup was extremely flat. and didn't have much depth on it at all. He had the separation in velocity, but it certainly wasn't sharp. And the curveball was something that was okay, but didn't have that really good hammer effect on it. So, you know, the eye test tells you it might be, now that we get 10 starts for him, handful of starts, it might be into a dead arm phase, but this is a phase you just can't work through. The games are too important. So the flip-flop potentially here, Kikuchi tonight, Hyunjin Ryu, if everything goes well for the Blue Jays this evening, likely to get the start then on Saturday. But that also positions Kikuchi to maximize his availability for game one, game two of the American League wild card. So one, it's about the start tonight. Two, it's maximizing the time in between a potential start when Kikuchi is not going to be part of the rotation. It's a three-game series, remember? So Kikuchi is a great option to have in the Blue Jay bullpen, especially if we go to the trop and the Rays have a couple other left-handed bats back. Now this gives the Blue Jays an opportunity to weaponize that bullpen with even a guy that's stretched out, a guy that's left-handed, and try to stuff out, you know, any left-handed matchups that potentially could be next week. So this has a couple of layers to it. First and foremost, Kikuchi's been really good this season for the Blue Jays. And also then, it gives the Blue Jays an opportunity for a better position bullpen and shaping out how they construct the roster moving into the wild card.
Also, maybe one trickle down, this is thinking negatively, if you do have to use Gausman on Sunday to clinch a spot, then Kikuchi is more available for that three-game wildcard set. Ben, what does this tell you about the potential playoff role for Ryu? I think my read on it is that wildcard roster, we're almost certainly not seeing him there. Is he someone that if this extended, you could see back in the mix at all? Or is this something that, you know, the like you said, the games are too important right now for Ryu to work through whatever he's working through, whether it's a dead arm phase or not. They're only going to get more important from here.
They're only going to get more important. And I don't see a scenario that the Blue Jays, one, would need him to be part of the rotation. Just the way that the postseason is laid out, not going to factor into the bullpen in the first round. In the ALDS, you really don't need, just because of the construct of the off days and shifting around, you can get by with your best being part of the rotation, which is what you want to do, right? Regardless of who has to pitch in 162, there's going to be days built in to allow everybody to reset the rotation moving into the American League Division Series, if the Blue Jays are fortunate enough to advance to the Division Series. So we're putting carts before the horses here, but I just don't think that Hyunjin Ryu factors into the postseason plan for the Blue Jays.
Which is unfortunate. Fun guy to have around, certainly. I mean, he'll be around still, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
A borderline pitching coach at that point, I would imagine. But, yeah, it's been fun to see him make this comeback. But, yeah, we all entered this year with him as a, hey, that's gravy if he makes it back, and that's probably where we're at now. On the other side, on the position player side, Ben, there are still a couple of small decisions for the Blue Jays to make, but they got the big one in that Brandon Belt is back and looks very good. We saw the same lineup with just the order juggled a little bit Tuesday and Thursday. In your estimation, is that your game one wild card lineup, the one we saw yesterday?
Absolutely. I said that on the air last night, and I was talking earlier in the week with John Schneider about, if Belt comes back, if he feels okay, would you move him up in the order? And Joshel, the 1-2-3 that kind of the Blue Jays have ridden through the month of September, going with Springer, Bichette, and Guerrero. And the Blue Jays want to balance that out. Now, if there is even a left-handed starter that factors into the equation, could you see a Brandon Belt and a Kevin Biggio? Absolutely. But the way that the Blue Jays rolled it out last night, and talking with people even before this move, I got the sense, one, that it was going to happen. They would love to give it a test run here in the final handful of games. But also, I really believe, as a right-handed starter, and the Blue Jays are going to get it if they go to Minneapolis, if they go to the St. Petersburg and face the Rays or the Twins, game one will be a right-handed starter. You know, you're getting Sonny Gray. You're going to get Pablo Lopez. You're going to get Tyler Glasnow. Power right-handed bat, right-handed starters, and the Blue Jays bats lined up to balance out and try to lengthen the roster going righty-lefty. And you know, Brandon Bell being plugged into there is a big deal, and that helps the Blue Jays balance it out. And we saw him lean on a three-run home run last night. That's gravy, right? But it's the at-bats that he's having. He doesn't look like he's too off kilter with the time that he missed. He came back. He worked on the high velocity machine a lot. So Brandon Belt is really the linchpin to give the Blue Jays an opportunity to run out 1-9 like John Schneider had him stacked up. And it wouldn't surprise me in the least that the Blue Jays roll out this in game one of American League Wild Card Series. And not only what happens at the top of this, but look at what 7, 8, and 9 now jostled around. One, you got Matt Chapman out of that 5 and 6 hole. There were too many empty at-bats for Matt Chapman over the run of this. He has had opportunities to turn it around. He was given a vote of confidence. They love his defense, obviously. Some of the at-bats are good. He's just missing too many fastballs in too big a spot. So you shift him out of the 5 and 6 spot. You move guys around a little bit. You're looking for that contact. Kirky's driving the ball on the line a lot more than what he was in the front half of the season. He's had a really nice approach in the last couple of months. And then Kevin Kiermaier. Don't think that this move was just because it's the struggle of a Chapman and a Varsho to get the ball in play consistently. Kevin Kiermaier has earned kind of this bump up, and this is all about string consecutive hits. Because the Blue Jays, for the most part, we've been complaining about the offense not running into big home runs, not having multiple home run games, not finding that three-run home run. So now the Blue Jays are trying to construct a lineup where contact comes first, and Kevin Kiermaier has done his job, and he's going to get that number 7 spot.
Well, that's an interesting twist, though, because I remember someone telling you at the start of the season they were going to lead the league in hits from the 9 hole.
And he did it. He did it.
yeah.
Kevin Kiermaier told us that. And you know what? And he can embrace that number 9 spot. But you know what? He did his job. And now it's about not how many. It's about when. So Kevin Kiermaier can come through in that number 7 spot at the right time. Boy, that'll be huge for Toronto.
Yeah, he leads the American League with 83 hits out of the 9 hole. Leody Tavares, the only guy close. Michael Harris has more on the other side, but, you know, that's Atlanta. They're in their own stratosphere for they get
Holy
their own
smoke,
category
sorry,
for stats yeah. and things like that. So if this is the main lineup, Ben, and we're talking, look, I'm not trying to look ahead to the wild card, but we're talking about these games this weekend as must wins as well. So the same logic holds here. If that is the lineup, it kind of turns Whit Merrifield and Davis Schneider into pinch hitters extraordinaire. Would you like to see those guys get a couple reps this weekend in that pinch hit role for familiarity? I know Whit, as a veteran, has been there a lot. Davis Schneider's only pinch hit twice this year.
Yeah, you know, the Davis Schneider, you know, the shine might have worn off, right? It's been a really tough rut. He hasn't had a hit in his last 30 at-bats. Coming up in a pinch hit situation, you're not going to pinch hit just to pinch hit. You're going to pinch hit in these games, or you're going to pinch hit in the postseason for results. That's what you're going to do in a pinch hit role. So I would like to see Whit become more familiar in a pinch hit scenario and get those opportunities than it would be even to have Davis Schneider get the pinch hit opportunity. I was talking with a couple of coaches. They'd really love to give Cam Eaton some opportunity to get into a lineup, not maybe even necessarily start, but they'd love to give him some game reps in the outfield. You know, he's a little bit more of a it's not a wild card, but it's somebody they would love to get more comfortable on top of what he's been able to do on the bases already. I really think some defensive reps, you know, 3 or 4 innings here or there would be really in the cards for the Blue Jays to stack that up as they think about, you know, final decisions moving into a postseason roster. Things can change. Matchups, of course, the Blue Jays do deep data dives into matchups and swing planes and bullpen availability and who they would project to be coming up for, you know, to swap out a left-handed for a right-handed batter or vice versa into where their opponent would have bullpen availability. So a lot of thinking goes in behind that versus just overall results in the present state. So if they feel that, you know, Davis Schneider has an incredible opportunity because of his swing decisions and how a pitcher might attack him from an opponent standpoint, that might edge him in front of somebody else to make the postseason roster. But I just don't see a lot of opportunity for Davis over the next 3 days.
That's a tough one. The other side of this one, Ben, Tampa Bay doesn't have anything to play for in the standings. Baltimore clinched the American League East last night. Tampa is locked into wild card one. Now, they can do some smaller things. They could, you know, play spoiler to a division opponent. They could at least force the Jays to use Kevin Gausman on Sunday in case Tampa Bay and Toronto play in the wild card. There are some things like that, but the priority for Tampa is probably what we would be talking about for the Blue Jays had they done their work earlier, which is, yeah, let's spend the weekend optimizing for the wild card series, not worrying about optimizing for every single game here. What do you think this weekend looks like from the Tampa Bay Rays perspective?
I think it's going to be game by game. Savali's going to start tonight, mm-hmm. right? I get the feeling that Taj Bradley is going to start tomorrow and serve maybe not necessarily a big-time starting role, but he'll go out there and get some reps. And then it's a total wild card on Sunday because of what you just said. The Rays are in. They know they're in. They know the spot, especially last night after the clinch by Baltimore Orioles. I think it's going to be a lot of Erasmo Ramirez coming out of the bullpen on Sunday. And then if there is a guy that wants a sharpening inning to get ready for a potential run on Tuesday and Wednesday from a Tampa Bay perspective, then Kevin Cash says, all right, three guys came to me. Guess what? This is how he might start one of those guys as an opener, right? Just to get the inning out of the way in the first or the second. Sunday could be crazy from a Rays perspective and very unorthodox, if you will, from how Kevin Cash or the Rays do anything. So take Sunday out of it. That's just going to be like a spring training game, I really think, from Tampa Bay's perspective. Spoiler, certainly in the back of their mind on Friday and Saturday, because Friday and Saturday could dictate how game one of that wild card. And you mentioned if the Rays can force the Blue Jays to use Kevin Gausman, Tampa Bay has to be much better about knowing Kevin Gausman's not going to factor in to an appearance at the Trop, which you would want to do. So there's still some business to certainly be had from Tampa Bay's perspective. And, from Saturday and Sunday's perspective, I think it's all dictated on what happens tonight.
So, Ben, you will be calling, of course, the wild card series if the Blue Jays get there. If they draw Tampa Bay, this is a straightforward one for you, right? Like, you've just seen Tampa Bay twice in a row. How are you juggling the, for your prep perspective? Hey, I might see this team a bunch in the wild card. That's nice. But you also got to keep an eye on Minnesota just in case. How do you handle this weekend from a play-by-play prep role?
With a beer and a bucket of popcorn. You just sit back and you enjoy the ball games. I stayed up last night. I watched the end of the Rangers and the Mariners, and that, unsuspecting twist, but really the way the Rangers bullpen has performed the last month, really not that much of a surprise. We've seen this act from Aroldis Chapman before, and in the big spot, he completely unraveled last night. So I'm enjoying it. I'm embracing it. I feel, too, with the last three games from last weekend that the Blue Jays and the Rays played, plus the six that we're going to have capping it off by the time we get to Sunday, and then the potential three more, I'm going to know them just about as well as I do the Toronto Blue Jays at this point, right? So from a prep standpoint, it's going to be fun. And as we learned last year, going through the wild card scenario with the Mariners, the plays are most important. You just try to deliver the moment. You have the big call, the big play, and let the crowd speak for itself and help it translate in the audio spectrum. So it's definitely going to be fun. And these last 3 days are certainly something that I'll be drinking coffee and hopefully enjoying, from start to finish.
Well, I look for all of our nerves. I hope the Blue Jays are able to clinch today and, yes, they win. And then, maybe whoever's hosting it at 1 a.m. calls you and you can call that they've clinched the playoffs then. But from a purely radio call perspective, I kind of hope it comes into tomorrow so we can get that Ben Wagner, the Blue Jays have clinched a wild card spot call.
I am waiting. I am waiting to deliver it. I would love to deliver it live, and have the moment and not just one of those wait and sees. We're going to have to wait and have chicken fingers at the Ritz. We don't want one of those scenarios playing out.
Yeah, certainly not. Ben Wagner, voice of the Toronto Blue Jays on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Thanks for taking the time this morning. Enjoy this weekend.
You too, Blake.
Ben Wagner, voice of the Blue Jays, who'll be doing this series alongside Arden Zwelling if and when the Toronto Blue Jays are in the wild card series. He'll be doing those games, of course, for you as well on the Sportsnet Radio Network, on the Sportsnet app, on the MLB app. Tremendous fun listening to Ben in big moments. And I mean, I would say this if he were still on the line or we were talking face-to-face as well, but he has been in the pocket lately. Some of those calls from the Red Sox and Rays series, it's been so nice out that I've spent some of the games listening on radio and then catching up on TV later, but walking around for a few innings. And yeah, Ben is... Ben's playoff ready. Who is not playoff ready? Aroldis Chapman. Let's take a break. We'll talk to Levi Weaver of The Athletic, author of their daily The Windup newsletter. He's been a Rangers beat reporter for years, but he is now locked in on that AL West race, whether he likes it or not. They take him off the beat. They make him a national guy. And then, hey, guess what? The Texas Rangers and the AL West are the most nonsensical and most interesting part of the schedule heading into the final weekend here. We'll take a break. We'll see how the other teams in this American League wildcard race shape up, how it could affect the Toronto Blue Jays this weekend as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Everything Raptors before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. My eyes need a shave. What else could go wrong? A lyric from that song, a lyric from The Windup today at The Athletic. Levi Weaver and Ken Rosenthal have a daily newsletter there, taking a look at everything that's most important in baseball that night. And what else could go wrong in the NL wildcard race where, hey, as much as baseball tried to avoid it, we might be playing some off day Monday baseball. Levi Weaver joins us now. How are you, buddy?
I'm hanging in, man. It has been a full week for me, but this is my first year doing national writing, and baseball is like, welcome to the last week of baseball, you sweet, lovely little child. We're going to just... We're going to make it as chaotic as possible.
Yeah, they're going to make it as chaotic as possible. And by the way, the last weekend of baseball might also extend into Monday. For anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, Marlins-Mets game on Tuesday got postponed, and then yesterday's game got suspended. So there is a 2-1 game in the top of the ninth that needs to be finished on Monday if Miami's still in the playoff mix. Levi, I want to do AL wildcard stuff with you, but this NL wildcard race... Man, we still got four teams within three games of each other for two spots. None of them are actually playing against each other. This is the most possible scoreboard watching weekend in the NL. I could imagine just how big an extra wrinkle is this Marlins outcome where we could conceivably not know the wildcard teams until like Monday afternoon.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Like, it is very possible that the Marlins go from Pittsburgh to New York, get all suited up and play like less than a full inning and then celebrate in New York after playing less than an inning. That whole thing in New York was crazy. I mean, the fact that they had to postpone Thursday's game until Friday for a doubleheader I'm losing track of days now. No, it was none of those days. It was Tuesday and Wednesday. Anyway, so the problem was that the Mets didn't properly tarp their field over the weekend when neither team was in town, and there was a bunch of rain, and the field was in horrible condition. And so even though there wasn't much rain in the first game of that series, they still had to postpone it and play a doubleheader the next day to get the field right. So already the Marlins are upset, right? Because that means that their pitcher that was going to pitch that day – he was now unable to pitch the season finale. Well, the good news is now Monday he can just come back and pitch the ninth inning. Absolutely chaotic. The fact that game was suspended also means that the Padres live to see another day. Their elimination number is one and has been, I think, for like 3 days now. They technically have not been eliminated yet because everybody lost last night. The Cubs lose again in Atlanta. The Diamondbacks lose, which doesn't really affect the Padres, but just for good measure, the Diamondbacks, who are in the second position, they also lost. It is sheer chaos.
It's a mess. And yeah, poor John Berti has to stay on first base the whole time. The whole weekend he has to stay at Citi Field standing on first base with that game suspended. So that's a mess. And elsewhere, if you're keeping an eye on that NL wildcard race, Arizona plays Houston, which is AL relevant. Miami plays Pittsburgh. The Cubs play Milwaukee, and Cincinnati plays St. Louis. And then, yeah, maybe a Miami versus New York Mets capper on Monday. We don't know yet if they'd bother with that, if it's not relevant to the seeding, but we'll see. It gets messy there. So Houston, Arizona is relevant over in the American League West. Levi, I know that is a division you've spent a lot of time in before becoming a national writer. And yeah, you joked a little bit about MLB being like, here's what last week of baseball is like. Feels like they've also kind of been like, oh, you thought you were done with the Texas Rangers, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like they get out and they keep sucking me right back in. My favorite part of the chaos that's happening this week has to do with the AL West and subsequently the AL wildcard. And that is, we could have four teams for three playoff spots all finish with an exact identical 89 and 73 record. It's still possible. So if the Mariners sweep the Rangers, if the Astros win, I think it would be 2 out of 3. Mm-hmm. I don't have my notes in front of me. I think 2 out of 3 in Arizona. And if Toronto only wins one against the Rays, then they are all tied at 89 and 73, which means from those four, you have to determine an AL West champion, and then which Toronto is not eligible for. And then between the other three, you have to determine two playoff spots. I think I have this right. I hope I have this right, because it went out in the newsletter like this today. But I think that I'm like pretty sure that the rule is Astros, Mariners, Rangers, instead of it being head-to-head, right? So the Rangers own the tiebreaker over the Mariners own the tiebreaker over the Astros own the tiebreaker over the Rangers. It would go into like a round robin of head-to-head. So you take all of the records against each other, and who has the best combined record against the other two teams. So the Mariners would be the champs. The Astros would be second. They would be the wild card. And then it would be down to Rangers. Now we face you up against the Blue Jays, who has the best record against each other head-to-head, and that would be the Rangers. So it would be those three. That would be this. So basically, if Toronto wins two games, they got nothing to worry about. Nothing anybody in the West does can hurt them if they just win two games over the weekend.
Which sounds pretty straightforward, right? The Tampa Bay Rays don't have anything to play. Like, the most stakes we can put on for the Rays, other than getting healthy and lining things up, is, yeah, maybe you could force the Jays to use Kevin Gausman on Sunday so that you don't have to face him in a wild card. So this should be straightforward, but the Jays have not been straightforward at any time this year. If you are the Rays, what do you think is the, like, are you concerning yourself with wildcard two, wildcard three at all if you're the Rays, or is this just about, you know, let's get healthy and let's line up the rotation and things like that?
You know, it's got to cross their mind, right? Like, if it crosses my mind, I'm sitting here talking to a buddy last night, and like, you know what the Rangers should really do? They should win one game to make sure that they get the division over the Mariners. And then they should just lose to the Mariners to try to get Seattle into the playoffs instead of Houston, so that they can face the Mariners instead of the Astros, because they fared much better against them this year. If I'm thinking about that, you know, people in the Rays who are much smarter than me are thinking about the various scenarios, especially if it involved winning instead of intentionally losing. So I'm sure that it crosses their mind, but I am also sure that they would rather be at 100% health against any team than have, you know, a couple of guys get hurt and face the team that they prefer to play.
So you joked a little bit there about, or half joked about, yeah, well, Texas would rather face Seattle than Houston. There are scenarios here, and look, Arizona has everything to play for too, so Houston's not going to have an easy task here. There are scenarios here where Houston doesn't make the playoffs, and that is so far from where the expectations were for this team. They're a little bit like the Jays this year, I think, in that, you know, they've never really found that upper gear where they go on a big run. They just kind of win 4 out of 7 every week. They are the defending World Series champion, though, and they have made 6 playoff berths in a row with a pair of World Series in there. Just how huge a disappointment and a disruption in the AL West would it be if this Astros team doesn't crack the playoffs?
I think it'd be a disappointment for Astros fans, who've probably gotten pretty accustomed to winning in the last few years. Frankly, and I'm sure that there is some, like, I live in North Texas bias coming into this answer. I am freely admitting that that's probably the case. But it feels like around the league, people are still, I think anytime a team wins so many years in a row, everybody starts to get bored with them. So there's that. But also just, I think there's some lingering, like, yeah, that's the team that got their World Series by cheating, their first World Series by cheating. I think that engendered a lot of ill will towards the Astros around the league. And so I think it really wouldn't be that big of a disappointment to a lot of people. I think there'd be a lot of people that would be just fine with the Astros not making the playoffs. Now, for the Astros brass, would it be disappointing? For sure. I don't know. Maybe that's what you get when you fire your general manager after he wins a World Series. They probably could have used some more starting pitching this year. The offense did get off to a slow start, but really the rotation suffering the injuries that they did has kind of been, I think, maybe a bigger issue than a lot of people are giving it credit for.
So elsewhere in the American League West, obviously the Rangers and Mariners head-to-head here. There's a lot on the line. So last night, the Rangers are in good shape. They're up 2-1. It's the bottom of the ninth. They turn it over to the guy they acquired to shore up what was always a shaky bullpen, and it's Aroldis Chapman. He loads the bases, and he gets yanked from that game, and they end up losing it. Man, I know that in the playoffs, you know, an offense that's high powered and hits a lot of home runs, maybe you think that that team's going to profile a little better in postseason baseball, but it's hard to look past this Rangers bullpen. How do you come down on this Rangers team's chances of making a run, like a real run in the postseason, given how shaky this bullpen still looks?
Yeah. First of all, 2-1 in the ninth is never a comfortable place for the Rangers this year. That's like, is probably right where you want them if you're the opponent. You're exactly right that the bullpen's going to be an issue. You do need a good bullpen in the playoffs. Now, obviously, your rotation is shortened a little bit, and so the bullpen already now includes Andrew Heaney, who had been a starter. You get to sort of push some of those guys back. The other big question mark for me, we're starting to hear rumors that, like, you know, the Rangers have not ruled out Max Scherzer for the playoffs.
Mm.
He might be back. He might be able to bring it back just in time for the playoffs. But if that's the case, he's not really stretched out to a starter's workload. And so I can't help but question, like, is Max Scherzer going to be your closer in the playoffs? Because I feel a whole lot more confident with him out there than just about anybody else they've run out in the ninth inning this year. So, yeah, being able to shorten that up a little bit, I think not using Aroldis Chapman on back-to-back days would be a real great thing to avoid, because he has not been great when he's pitched on back-to-back days. Jose Leclerc has looked a lot better in the last 2 weeks. You never know with him. He always seems, one pitch short of a meltdown. But when he's good, he's really good. So, yeah, I think if they just ride, like, the horses that they can trust super hard, and then maybe get, Max Scherzer coming in wearing a big cape and Superman clothes. It's possible, but that's a very optimistic view of it. Very pessimistic view is no lead is safe, and that's not a good formula for the playoffs.
It's not. And look, Scherzer's come out of the bullpen five times in the postseason before. He's done it with Detroit and with Washington and with the Dodgers. So there's some experience there, if not as a true closer. I'd love to see it. It's better than a playoffs without Max Scherzer altogether. But yeah, it's hard to feel too confident in the Rangers holding a lead. At least they have the offense, though. And we know the stat of more runs come via the home run in the postseason than in the regular season. The Rangers get a big sigh of relief this week with Corey Seager being okay and being back in the lineup after that hit by a pitch. I know that the Rangers will never be comfortable because of their bullpen in a game. How uncomfortable will other teams be, though, given that this Texas team is best in class at putting up runs in a hurry?
You know what, though? Watching this team this year, a lot of those home runs and those beginnings have come early in the game and have come kind of to establish a big lead instead of coming back. They really have not had very many comeback wins. And in fact, I think their first win after I'm estimating this date and time is very bendy right now. but I think it wasn't until September that they first win after trailing going into the ninth inning. So other teams, how comfortable will they be? If they keep that lead into the eighth and ninth inning, the Rangers have not shown a whole lot of ability to come back super late in games. I think it's going to be the starting pitchers that will be uncomfortable, rightly so. I mean, the Rangers scored runs in bunches when their whole lineup is healthy. So I think the game plan for the Rangers in the playoffs is just going to be try to go out, establish as big a lead as possible, and then hold on to your butts.
They are the opposite of the Blue Jays in that way, where the Blue Jays, despite having maybe the best pitching staff in baseball this year, get trounced in the first inning and then get their offense all in the 7, 8, 9 innings. The Texas Rangers, you're right, I have the numbers in front of me, about 70 points of OPS worse in the final three innings than they are in the middle of the game, about 40 points worse than they are in the early chunks of the game. So that is your feeling there, Levi, is certainly backed up statistically. So the Mariners are the team, playing from behind in this series. They come back last night, and it's a J.P. Crawford walk-off for them. Julio Rodriguez is obviously Seattle's best player. If there were a second-half MVP, at least a second-half wins above replacement leader, it would be Julio Rodriguez. But just how crucial to what this team's done in the second half is J.P. Crawford?
Yeah, I mean, Scott Servais said last night, paraphrasing, but basically that, J.P. Crawford might be our MVP, which is going to shock a lot of people. Julio Rodriguez is the superstar, but Crawford might be the most valuable player for the Mariners, and that's a big endorsement from his manager. And how much does it help the Mariners too to have those two guys at your two premier defensive positions with Rodriguez in center field and Crawford at shortstop? That's a pretty dang good foundation for a baseball team. I think they're going to be good for quite a while. It surprises me that Crawford is 28, by the way. I keep thinking he's younger than that. But he's already 28 years old. That has nothing to do with answering your question. It was just one of those things bouncing around in my head. I think to your point, yes, Crawford has been one of their most valuable players, and you could make the argument that he's been the most valuable player this season.
28 and closer to 29 than 28, obviously locked up to 2026. It was I bit badly on a pump fake when Paul Sewald got traded, and I thought maybe the Mariners would be even light sellers, and I was like, well, the Jays could really use some help here. What would it take to get J.P. Crawford? And the answer is more than you can afford, because he's really good, and this Mariners team was not actually selling. They were just kind of lurking there, I guess, a little bit. Elsewhere in the playoffs, you and Ken Rosenthal touched on this the other day in one of the editions of the windup. There are some guys who have a lot of potential money on the line with their playoff performance. Now, teams will look, primarily at the bulk of the work, the larger sample, but there are a couple key free agents heading into this playoffs. Guys could make themselves some money. Guys could cost themselves some money. When you look at that class of impending free agents, who are you most curious about at the individual level these next couple weeks?
Yeah, I hate to take the easy answer that Ken already went into, but Aaron Nola is an obvious answer, with the starting pitching class being relatively thin next year, and thinner yet, because Shohei Ohtani is not going to be a pitcher next year. Nola, I think, is one of those guys that could really solidify himself as one of the top free agents that is on the market next year. Let me real quick run through my list of who else could be a free agent coming up.
What about Matt Chapman? He's a guy for the Blue Jays that's had a really tough season after a tremendously hot start, and could be the top infield name on the free agent market.
Really could. And, Chapman is an interesting guy with his, early career in Oakland. He was kind of looking to be on the trajectory of like mega star. Some injuries have kind of derailed, I think, maybe that trajectory. But yeah, he's still a very valuable player, and I think it's always the case that, I think this is a case from people who are observing the sport, fans, people in my position, your position, who are observing, that those playoff performances tend to sort of carry a little extra weight. And I wonder if that's just because it's the last thing we see and it's the most exciting thing we see before the end of the season, and so it's fresh on our minds. I do wonder how much those performances come into play in front offices, who tend to take a broader view you know, they've got their metrics of what's, you know, what they value and what they don't. And to that point, though, like, you know, if you're a front office and you're planning to contend next year, you want to know that a guy can show up on the big stage. Like, yeah, when we make the playoffs, I know this guy isn't going to wilt. He's going to be fine. I think it probably all gets factored in a little bit, but I would love to, if I was still in the business of interviewing front office members and asking them questions, I think that's a very fascinating question that I would like to get to the bottom of.
Yeah, I think that's maybe something we'll ask about around here as well. Levi, before I let you go, last one. In the windup newsletter and over at The Athletic, you kind of wrapped up the vote that The Athletic staff took on some of these awards. There was a lot of uniformity in those ballots. I think everyone agrees that it's Shohei Ohtani and Gerrit Cole on the AL side, probably going to be Blake Snell for the NL Cy Young, and that you guys had it for Acuna for NL MVP, although not unanimously there. Brendan Hyde won Manager of the Year in the American League side. I think everyone really understands that one. Craig Counsell tied for the NL side with the Milwaukee Brewers. And I bring up Counsell because I've talked to a couple people who have named, Craig Counsell and Kevin Cash of the Rays as probably the best in-game tinkerers when it comes to the manager position. How much more does that matter to you come postseason time?
Oh, it matters a lot. It's the ability to make those decisions, but, you know, with urgency is a big deal. And it's a completely different ballgame for managers in the postseason, because if you're managing a game in April and, you know, at some point you have to make the call, is this a hill I want to die on? Do I run that extra reliever out there to try and win this game? Or do I save the bullpen, you know, for the long-term health of the bullpen? We're going to win more games if I go ahead and just kind of wave the white flag here. That's absolutely not the case in the playoffs, and every game is so, so urgent. And I remember hearing the knock on Ron Washington, you know, when I was watching the Rangers in the playoffs a decade plus ago, was like, he's not managing with enough urgency. I do kind of wonder if those guys who like to tinker, if maybe this is like, yes, finally I can do all the tinkering I want without having to worry about, you know, how is this going to affect the bullpen 2.5-3 weeks in the future? So, I absolutely think it matters. But I've also never met a manager who isn't at least thinking about it. Like, they're all aware of the moves that could be made. You don't really sneak a whole lot past a guy once he gets to this level of managing. And so I think a lot of it is just the willingness to pull the trigger and make a decision. I think it's very, very important.
And it also means that, it gives us more to nitpick at if we have a 2-hour radio show every day, which is great. Levi Weaver of The Athletic, the wind-up newsletter every day in your inbox. Thanks so much for taking the time out, man. Enjoy the chaos of this weekend.
Absolutely. Have a good one, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Levi Weaver of The Athletic, the wind-up newsletter. You can read it every day on The Athletic. You can subscribe to it so it shows up in your inbox every day. Good whip around Major League Baseball every morning. And yeah, it's chaotic right now in both the American League and the National League. To reset for you, so Baltimore has locked up the American League East. Tampa Bay does not have anything to play for this weekend other than maybe harming the Jays, forcing them to use Kevin Gausman, etc. But nothing in the standings. In the American League West, Texas and Seattle are playing each other. The division is still on the line. There are potential 3-4 teams. Tie scenarios there. Houston is playing Arizona. Arizona has lots to play for as they're in the National League wildcard mix as well. The National League wildcard has 4 teams for 2 spots separated by just 3 games. So just nearly as tight, even more tight actually, than the American League, where there are 4 teams for 1 division and 2 wildcard spots. And as Levi laid out there, I can confirm based on my own tiebreaker work that, yeah, the Jays would be the odd team out if there's a 4-way tie. You know how you can avoid that? You win 2 games. Win 2 games and you're guaranteed to be in. Win 1 tonight and you're scoreboard watching, hoping for a Seattle loss or a Houston loss. And maybe you're popping some champagne as soon as tonight. The Jays are 1 game up on Houston, 2 games up on Seattle. It will be Aaron Civale against Yusei Kikuchi down at Rogers Center tonight. Programming note that it's a 7:00 start today, 3:00 start tomorrow as normal on a weekend, but Sunday's game is at 3:00 as Major League Baseball looks to start all the games at roughly the same time so that you can't do the wait on your opponent's result to make your decisions kind of thing. Whatever happens, whatever the opponent, whatever the schedule, we'll be back Monday at 10 a.m. to start either teeing up the wildcard series or cleaning the Blue Jays lockers out. Blair and Barker are going to have you 5 to 7 today as usual. They will have Jays Talk for you post-game all through the weekend, so every game there. Jesse Rubinoff and Shou Ali are coming up for you next. I'm sure they'll talk a lot of Blue Jays and set this one up as well. Thanks to Levi Weaver of The Athletic for coming on, to Ben Wagner, to Adam Berry, and to Caitlin McGrath. Thanks to Nick Blackmore, Lance Kennedy, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass as well. Thanks to everyone who came on this week. Lots of good texts in the text line, most of which I didn't get to. I apologize for that, but there was obviously plenty to talk about outside of just the mailbag. There will be plenty to talk about on Monday. The Toronto Blue Jays could be out of a playoff spot and their season's over. They could be in a playoff spot visiting Tampa Bay. They could be in a playoff spot visiting Minnesota. We will talk to you Monday.